Thanks very much, Brian, and thank you to Genio for inviting me to speak today and also for selecting us for funding all those years ago and for trusting us to spend 700,000 wisely and well. So, 4 years ago, it's going to work, we were lucky enough to have been selected. We couldn't believe that funds of 700,000 were available to groups around Ireland. We were working away in South Tipperary, you know, old age psychiatrists, geriatricians, setting up our own services. We'd set up extra services for people with dementia. We'd set up a memory clinic. We'd set up a respite centre. The more we set up, the more we knew the gaps were there. And, you know, talking, Madeline and Francis, about the 5 o'clock phone call to the department on a Friday. Well, Friday evening at five was a very important pivotal time for us too, because that's when we'd be out in people's houses finding a person with dementia, an exhausted carer, on their knees, and our nurses and ourselves ringing everywhere to try and get a bed, try and get some help, and everything's full, everything's closed, nowhere to go except into the acute hospital on a trolley. And you know, that whole desperation, lack of appropriate response broke our hearts, and really it was very pivotal in applying for this and thinking, my goodness, we could be given 700,000 and we could change the world. And we could do it with people with dementia and their families at the core of that decision making. It was just an amazing opportunity. So we put together a consortium. We had anyone and everyone involved in it, 26 people in total. At the heart of it, three people with dementia and three family carers, all the old age psychiatry team, the geriatricians, GPs, public health nurses, anyone and everyone who was involved in dementia in South Tip, and four voluntary bodies, the Carers Association, the Alzheimer's Society, Muintir na Tíre, and the Community and Voluntary Forum. And we sat down together and thought about what we thought the gaps were. That's 16 of the 26, fantastic people. I must thank them here today too. You know, people with dementia kept coming to meetings even when they were losing their language. Carers kept coming even when they had to pay people to mind their loved ones to come and support us in this work. And you know, we owe them an really extraordinary debt of gratitude for what they've done and continue to do. And we all said we want to transform the life experience of people with dementia. Things aren't good enough. We want to make it very different. Well, we consulted widely too. We didn't just rely on what we thought was wrong. So we spoke to people with dementia, with mild to moderate dementia. We took advice from people, from the carers of people with dementia whose loved ones had died, and said, you know, what would have worked for you? What was missing? Obviously, lots of things were missing, but we needed to hear from them what really would have made a difference. And then we talked to carers, current carers of people with early dementia, more progressed dementia, and advanced dementia. And this is what they told us. Here's some of the findings from questionnaires and focus groups. They said they were happy to care. The benefits outweighed the sacrifices. They found it exhausting. Very few felt pressurized into the caring role, but they did feel very alone and they worried about end of life. We found that most of our carers were spouses living as a couple. It was 88%. Half of the carers themselves were over 65 and they had their own health and social care needs. And most had been caring for a single individual and half had been caring for more than 3 years. But we found, really horrifyingly, 10% had been caring for 10 years. I mean, that's just an extraordinary amount of care. It's probably someone with a stroke or Parkinson's who'd gone on to develop a dementia eventually. And most of them found the memory loss of dementia very difficult to cope with. Most had considered a nursing home admission in future as the disease progresses. But half of them had either refused to take a loved one home from hospital or considered an early nursing home admission because of fear of managing their loved one's symptoms. I mean, that was a very honest response to say that. I can't do it anymore. But it's a terrible indictment on the rest of us that we put people into that position. So that was something we really wanted to change. So we set up 5 steps. Our 5 steps cover the whole of the dementia journey from pre-diagnosis to end of life. I'm not going into those today. But the biggest thing we did in South Tipperary, and the biggest investment we made of our 700,000 was setting up a dementia support worker initiative. We developed the role of dementia support workers. We took on people who were already employed by the Carers Association and the Alzheimer's Society. They had to have FETAC level 5 training already, and then we interviewed them to see were they suitable to come and work with us. If we were happy with them, we then gave them a 2-day training program that we run. And on top of that, once they worked with us, we mentor and supervise them and meet them weekly and monthly. So what we wanted them to do was to engage with people, and we paid their car insurance too to get them out in the world because we felt it wasn't a minding service in people's houses we wanted. We started off initially offering people a 10-week service, 2 hours a week in the, you know, going out of the home. We were worried at the beginning obviously about rationing that amount of money because we didn't know what the need would be and we didn't feel we could offer long-term support to anybody. But it became very clear quickly that most people needed more than long-term or more than short-term care. And we really found, evaluating it constantly, there were different groups. About 50% of our people with dementia needed a goal-focused short-term support. That would be a 10-week model of support where they re-engaged with the kind of activities you heard about this morning, back into golf, back into clubs, back into activities they had given up. And 50% were able to manage that with our support to re-engage with other supports that were out there. But there were other groups too who needed different kinds of support. And we broke them down very carefully to really meet their needs. The second group there, the special support, that would be people with an early onset dementia or people with comorbid mental illness problems. And they needed extra support that couldn't be stopped after 10 weeks. So they were a separate group and we continued their support indefinitely. We also targeted people on the verge of placement because we knew that's a very difficult issue for families. And you know, withdrawing a service when families are struggling anyway, that wouldn't work. So we identify those people and continue service and give it maybe two or three times a week, depending on individual need. There's no set rule to what people get. We ask them what they need. We also have developed crisis support through the project, and that's been extraordinary. I'll talk about that later. And lastly, we offer a one-off day off. We say to carers, you can have a one-off day off anytime you want from the project. You'd be amazed how few people take it. You'd be amazed, people who you feel, wow, they need that. People are so generous in their response to this service. They always say, there's somebody worse off than me. We kind of say, well, I can't find anyone worse off than you, but people are amazingly generous. We found that the whole way, oh no, maybe there's somebody else who needs it. Nobody grabbing it and keeping it for themselves, never. Respite then. As it happens during our time doing the project, all hospital respite had stopped. For new patients, people who had been getting it continued to get it, but for various reasons due to bed closures and lack of staffing, there wasn't any new respite available, residential respite. And so what we were doing was sometimes considered respite. Now, we don't see them as mutually opposed services. A lot of our carers rely very heavily on respite and care very well knowing they're going to get a break every 6 weeks and couldn't live without it and need to know, you know, my daughter's getting married next summer, I need to know I can have that week off. I need to know now, I can't wait and see will there be a bed available. So we're not in any way opposed to residential respite, but we do understand that for some people with dementia, they're very disturbed there and come home worse and that the fallout for the families afterwards can even be worse. So, you know, that has to be taken into account. And we don't really see our service as respite, what we're doing with dementia support, because we see it as community and home-based support. It's very individualised. The person's at the centre of it, then the family, and then the needs. So we're always looking at what that person needs, and what you need would be different to what I need. So there's no one size fits all. It's not like this is what we give. It's very individualised. And I'm going to tell you about some of the crisis responses we've done. Just two this week. I rang the team yesterday and said, tell me something you did yesterday or the day before. So I'm going to tell you a story of a lady called Ellen. That's not her name and that's not her picture, but the story is true. So Ellen is 85 and she's living with her 87-year-old husband. She has dementia. They have one child who lives in another county. So they're surviving well. He's very keen to have her at home. They have dementia daycare one day a week. They have a bit of home help and they have once a week support from our dementia support worker who takes her out, and she really enjoys that. But we got a phone call yesterday morning that things have become very difficult because Ellen has started waking up at night and she's packing her bags, trying to go home to her parents, and she thinks she's getting married and she's very worried about the wedding and very worried about her parents. And her poor husband, who's 87, is trying to get her back to bed, and this has been going on for quite a few nights. And he contacted us about this. He's exhausted, she's exhausted, and you know, we went in immediately and said, what do you need? And all they want and all they need is 2 hours twice a week of extra support until this gets resolved. And so we were able to, got the phone call yesterday morning, got the assessment and the visit done by yesterday evening, and it's going to start tomorrow morning. And just contrast that to the 2 hours home help they've recently got. That took a visit by the OT and an OT report, a visit by the social worker and a social work report, a visit by the PHN and a CSARS form, a meeting of the home health coordinator and all the various people, and it took 4.5 weeks. You could be dead, you know. So a flexible, responsive, quick. They need the home help, that's really important, but we have to find a better way than 4.5 weeks and all that professional time tied up in it. These are the real deal breakers for families we find. Wandering, incontinence, night waking. So if you're looking after somebody and they've got all three of those, it's really, really hard to keep on caring. It's really hard to keep going because you're probably elderly yourself. If you have two out of the three, it's very hard. One out of the three is challenging enough. So what we're always trying to do is look at, are we heading into that territory and preempt it so that you can actually put in more support? For instance, say somebody who had a lot of night waking, it's very difficult to fix that medically. Medication doesn't usually work. I mean, they keep waking and wandering sedated. So sometimes the answer is to put in a carer at night to let the main carer sleep, and maybe you sleep in another house. Now, we wouldn't have a budget really to put that in for somebody eternally, but what we have done, say, is put in a support worker for a few nights just to show the carer the benefit, and then they funded it themselves, say, from their carer's respite grant. So we were able to model new ways of looking after the person that allowed them to stay at home, because with that three symptoms, people usually are heading to long-term care very fast, really because they're unmanageable for an elderly carer. So how do we deliver all this? We deliver it through a single point of contact. Single point of contact has been crucial. You phone one person in South Tipperary, one number, that has transformed everything. Because in the old way, people didn't know where to go. If you're that woman, or that man who's been up all night, who do you ring? Ring the GP? He has nothing to offer. Ring the PHN? She's nothing to offer. Try and get hold of me. Too many people you could potentially try and get hold of, none of whom has any response that's really of any value to you. So the single point of contact critical, and I think it's something that we could use, I think, throughout the health service. It has great potential application in every field. If you could just ring one number and get one response instead of, you know, looking around and when you're tired and struggling. And you know, we work in the health service and we find it difficult to navigate. We know how complex it is. Like, imagine what that's like when you're 87. It must be just impossible. So that's really transformed things. And a lot of people we meet with dementia, we just say, you can ring this number if you get into any difficulties. And they say, that's fantastic, I don't need anything. We never hear from them because they just know there's something there if they need it. They don't grab everything that's available. That doesn't happen at all. But they say, oh, I'm so glad to know if I need that'll be there. It's very non-bureaucratic. We don't have any forms. You don't have to get a form and fill it in to come to us. We fill in the forms. And that, again, is very, very simple and very effective because we're there to try and fix things. We're not trying to put in barriers. Like, I remember seeing a service once where, in order to get the service, you had to have a form that had to be filled in by the family, then the PHN, and then the GP. And until it came back filled in by all those people, it couldn't be given. So, you know, that just doesn't work. If you want to give the service, you have to make it as easy as possible. We have paperwork, we have bureaucracy, of course, but we do it. So for the person using the service, we make it easy. And that's transformational as well. And the person who actually delivers that service and who answers the single point of contact is a clinical nurse specialist in dementia. That's a role that we put in place through the project. Initially, we were doing it ourselves from our own daytime jobs, and we realised that needs to be someone with dedicated time, who's huge expertise, who can either maybe deal with it by just giving advice, who can go out and do a visit and assessment, who can put in some interventions, and also who can really send people in the right direction immediately, say they're very physically unwell or mentally unwell, they can call in the rest of us as need be. So that's been hugely valuable. And the other beauty of the project is that we were able to put in that post overnight. Once we knew that was needed, we didn't have to do a business plan, we didn't have to go through any tiers of authority, we just had the power to check to Regina that was okay, and we put the post in place. So, you know, we were able to make our own response to the clinical need that emerged as we developed and delivered this service. So that's been, you get the support service through single point of contact, which is manned and staffed by a clinical nurse specialist in dementia, and that's the, you know, a model that we just think is very robust, it's strong, it has good governance within the health service, it's working really well. So we now, our project has come to an end. We've successfully mainstreamed it into the HSE, and we're really, really grateful to Michael Fitzgerald and all the HSE for supporting us so much in that, and our own local management. And we've talked to our carers since then and said, you know, as the project's developed, what has worked for you? What services are most important now that we have this range? Number one for them is home help. Number two is our service, our support worker service. Number three is the daycare centre. Then the Alzheimer's dementia daycare, HSE respite, home care packages. But they're all the cheap things. You know, they're not looking for OTs, physios, geriatricians in a big way. They're looking really for those cheap, effective, local services to support them. That's what they've said to us. This has been really cost effective. The money we've spent on this service would have kept three people in a nursing home for 3 years, for the 3 years of the project. And for that money, we've supported 350 people at home. So there's just no question about the cost effectiveness of it. It's amazing. We have great feedback from families on what the service has meant to them. They said, great value to my mother, lifesaver for us, person-centred and uplifting, helpful, friendly, made us feel it wasn't hopeless, looking forward to the day the support would come. I suppose, what was it like for us? It was really transformational too. Challenging, rewarding, extraordinary, but it really changed the public's view of the HSE. They started to see the HSE as people who listen and who want to help, and that was great for everybody, and it's great for our local managers as well to be part of that, you know, not to be the people who are saying no, there are people who are actually saying yes. I suppose, you know, from my own point of view, now that our project has come to an end and it's been successfully mainstreamed, I think, you know, we're all just at the beginning of a very big journey in Ireland where we need to do this kind of work that you're hearing about today everywhere, and you're all champions of that because you're here. You know, we all have to go away and do more, and you know, if we don't do it, who will do it? And if we don't do it now, when will it be done? Because we know that the numbers are going to double in the next 15 years. And that's frightening, but it is true. And before I stop and hand over to a lovely film from Genio about families, I just leave you with a quote that I like, that I find inspirational when I think like that. So whatever you can do or think you can, begin it. Boldness has genius, power and magic in it. Thank you.